Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome in to On the Clock. As you can probably tell, this is not Mark Grody. Mike Esposito, glad to be filling in for Grody this evening. I will have you until 8 o'clock on the clocks from 6 to 7, though, as we talk NFL draft. And believe it or not, the draft is less than 2 weeks away. That 1-1 pick will be made by your Chicago Bears on Thursday the 25th. Yes, only 13 days from now, less than 2 weeks. Caleb Williams will officially be a Bear, and then we'll see what happens from there. Draft coverage on the Score presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, and we're glad to be here with you this evening. On the clock today, we are excited to talk to Ted Wynn. He is the All-22 film analyst and staff writer at The Athletic. He will join us midway through the first hour here, around 6:20, to talk draft. We're going to break down some film with Ted and find out what he thinks. I think 1-1 is pretty much decided, don't you? I think that one is going to be Caleb. I think we've known that for a while now. But that 1-9 pick sure is a question mark. And we'll talk to Ted about that. We want to hear from you as well at 312-644-6767. You can text us there as well. We will read your texts and feel free to call as well. Be happy to chat with you on the program. Our producer is Alex Kuhn. You'll be hearing from him on the show as well as we talk Bears and we talk draft, which, like I said, I couldn't be more excited. I know the joke seems that the Bears have been on the clock for the better part of 2 years between last year trading the top overall pick to Carolina and then the trade of the century, as it turns out, turning into the number one again this year with the Bears being back on the clock at 1-1. Only this time they're going to take this pick and, you know, barring absolute insanity, Caleb Williams becomes a Chicago Bear on Thursday the 25th, 13 days from now. We will all rejoice. We'll see what number he is, and Parkins may have to get a new jersey. We'll see if Keenan Allen wants to keep that 13 or if maybe he gives it up to the rookie. Who knows?
No, we'll Tyler see what Scott. Happens.
No, Tyler Scott, I saw, and I this was, I actually chuckled as I read this, Alex. When Tyler Scott, it came out that he had changed his number from 13 to 10, yeah, I think that's about right, Tyler. Be happy to be on the squad. Either Allen or Caleb is going to end up with that 13. But I just think it's fun. I mean, listen, I love the bit when Danny did the, you know, let me get a Caleb Williams jersey and go into work. Before the Fields trade, before a lot of stuff, he's been on the Williams bandwagon for a long time. But you didn't foresee the Keenan Allen trade, and how could you? But they're both 13, so who's going to end up being 13, and does that mean that Danny has to buy another jersey? These are the hard-hitting questions that we don't know the answers to. So we will find out soon, but definitely find out who Caleb will be throwing the ball to. And is that someone, is one of those someones going to be picked at 1-9? That's part of what we'll talk to Ted Wynn about. 312-644-6767. We want to bring back some of the draft sound that we've had on the Score over the past week or so, some of the best items that we've had. Booger McFarland was on yesterday afternoon with Parkins and Spiegel, and it was a great interview. and it was very entertaining in terms of content, but also love listening to Booger. But he was asked about three technique. He was asked about what the Bears expect to do, or what he thinks the Bears expect to do at that ninth overall pick. The talk went to Byron Murphy. Is he a fit for what Matt Eberflus wants to do?
First of all, if you call him light at 295, then you're going to call me skinny at 285. So I appreciate that. That's number one. It really bothers me when people say, yeah, he's small. Okay, he's 6'1". He's 295 pounds. Last time I checked, Aaron Donald was 6'1", 285. Warren Sapp was 6'2", 290. John Randall was 6'1", 285. You follow me here? Grady Jarrett is 6 feet tall, 285. So maybe, just maybe, if you're looking for that guy that can play the three technique, maybe you might ought to get a guy that's 6'1", 6'2", 280, 290, that can get vertical, that has quickness, that can get penetration in an offensive scheme. Because I don't see many guys like, and this is nothing against Chris Jones, because I think Chris Jones is one of one. But very rarely does the 6'5", 300-pound guy do what the 6'1", 290 guy can do. And I just rattled off five or six guys that are pretty much the same size as Byron Murphy. And I think if you draft Byron Murphy, you will get similar production as far as a guy that can get vertical, a guy that can disrupt and penetrate. Because I think that's what Flus wants, man. Like, knowing that defense like the back of my hand, you got to have three or four dudes up front that can go get it. And I think Byron Murphy, whether you play him in nose or three technique, I think will fit in really well.
That's Booger McFarland on Yesterday with Parkins and Spiegel. And it's interesting because I totally agree. And Booger obviously played in this defense with Tampa. So we know he knows what he's talking about. And he's obviously a great analyst there for ESPN. But you're probably thinking to yourself, well, wait a second, they just drafted defensive tackles last year. Yeah, they did. But as he said, you need lots of those guys. And he rattled off, and of course he rattled off some of the Hall of Fame guys that have played at that three technique, at defensive tackle, at a similar size to what Byron Murphy is. But the Bears did. And you know what? What you need is depth. What the Bears have lacked on that defensive line the last few years is depth. We started to see it toward the end of last season after Montez Sweat was acquired, but you absolutely have needs there. So that's really the intrigue to me. And this is what, and Alex, I'd love your thoughts too, because as you look at nine, I mean, of course, wide receiver is the sexy position. It's the glamorous position. And there is a need. We're not going to deny that. But aren't we better suited? Might we not be better suited letting all the quarterbacks and receivers get taken in the top eight, and then you've got either the top one or two defensive players out of the entire draft. You have your pick. That's I'm almost leaning that way. I haven't really fully bought in on any one of those guys. But what do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think that's what makes this pick so intriguing. Like, we know what's going to happen at one. Now, yep. What's going to happen at nine? There are five options. I'll say four because I'm going to take away the option of trading up. I think with as little draft capital as they have, I don't think that that's a good option. But wide receiver, if one of the top three is there, of course, you've got to think about taking one of them. And then beyond that, defensive end, three technique. The three technique, Espo, in Matt Eberflus's defense is the most important position on the field. And what Booger McFarland is saying is you don't need 6'5", 320. You can take 6'1", 295 with the ability to rush the passer. That position has completely changed over the last 15 years since the introduction of guys like Geno Atkins, then after him, Aaron Donald at that position. So the question is, You had a guy there for you last year in Jalen Carter who was that position, and you said, if you're Ryan Poles, no, I don't care how good of a position or how much of a position of need this is. I don't care how good of a prospect this is. There's something that we don't like here. We're going to trade back, and we're going to take Darnell Wright, and that has been a great move so far. Now, the question is, do they go back to that this year? Do they trade back again and get themselves into position to maybe draft one of the top defensive linemen in this class?
Yeah, that is the interesting part, and that's where the draft intrigue comes from, and that's where the fun comes from for those of us that enjoy this type of thing. But I'm with you, Alex. I think, especially at that position, I mean, the very first free agent that Ryan Poles tried to sign back in 2022, 2 years ago and like 2 weeks, 2 years and 2 weeks ago, who was it? Defensive tackle Larry Ogunjobi, who then failed his physical. That didn't mean that they didn't go right after that position, which is what we're talking about. Now, he has since landed, I want to say, the Raiders. I don't quote me on that. But Larry Ogunjobi was the first free agent that Ryan Poles tried to sign. He obviously recognizes the importance of defensive tackle. He drafted Jervon Dexter and Zach Pickens in rounds 2 and 3 last year, so there was definitely an emphasis placed on that. Andrew Billings is still there. We've talked all about Montez Sweat and how great he has done. DeMarcus Walker on the other defensive end for now. And a nice trio of linebackers and a great secondary. To me, the strength of that defense. So there was a definite need on that defensive line. And if it's tackle, if it's three technique, if it's end, you know, a lot of people want the Bears to take one of the edge rushers, whether it's Dallas Turner or Leitu, the kid from UCLA.
Jared Verse from Florida State
as well.
We'll
see Jared Verse from Florida State. But the thing to me is, does it behoove them to be better off taking a defensive player? Is this not the better strategy? I understand Keenan Allen is an aging receiver. I understand DJ Moore is an aging receiver. I can't believe we're talking about our two Pro Bowl receivers as guys that we need to be worried about. But I get it. There's a need for a young receiver there. There's absolutely, you play three receivers in the NFL all the time. They did sign Gerald Everett to complement Cole Kmet. So you have a nice receiving core. You got DeAndre Swift out of your backfield. Then, of course, Keenan Allen was the big trade that Ryan Poles made as well. But, I mean, if Roma Dunze is sitting there, do you not have to take him? I mean, that is a
I feel like you almost have to.
I feel well, and so that's it. And Dane Brugler was on the station, one of the very best at draft analysis. Dane Brugler was on with Molly and Haw the other day, and here's what he had to say about Roma Dunze.
I don't know how you pass on Roma Dunze if he is there at that number 9 pick. No doubt the phone will be ringing off the hook. You will hear different offers from different teams moving up to that spot, maybe even from the Bills trying to get up that far, or the Colts at 15 trying to get up to get one of these guys. But look, when you have a receiver, and I know Keenan Allen bringing him in, no-brainer move, outstanding move, what he brings to your locker room, what he's going to bring to this offense. But when you're drafting Caleb Williams to be the guy for the next 10 years, Keenan Allen's not going to be on this team in 10 years. And, you know, you're thinking about for the 2025 roster, the 2026 roster, and you think about Roma Dunze and what he can be for the long term of the organization, I just don't think you pass on that. And there's no such thing as a can't-miss player in the draft. It's just the words should not be uttered when it comes to NFL draft prospects. But Roma Dunze might be the closest thing to that because he has size. He's 6'3", 220. He has speed. He's a really good athlete. But he understands how to play the receiver position with his route running, his ability to uncover. At the catch point, he's so good finishing through contact. No disrespect to Michael Penix, but over and over and over again, it is Roma Dunze bailing out the quarterback on film with some of the throws down the field. And so you have a guy that can work inside, outside, can do the dirty work, can give you big plays. Yeah, I just don't see how they pass on a Dunze at that number 9 pick.
And so that's Dane Brugler on with Molly and Haw. And I have to say, so after listening to that, you know, I'm sitting here advocating, well, gee, maybe defense is the way to go. When you hear that analysis of Adunze, and if you've seen any of the Washington Husky highlights from last year, we certainly watched a lot of the games with Penix and Adunze. Man, that makes it hard to pass on a guy like that if he is there. We will talk more about this on the other side of a break. We also want to talk O-line. An 847 texter asks, what about a top O-lineman? We're going to ask our guest, Ted Wynn, from The Athletic next. We're going to ask him about O-line. We're going to ask him about receiver. And certainly we're going to ask him more about defensive line. To me, those are the three areas where the Bears could go. And we'll find that out as we continue On the Clock with Ted Wynn from The Athletic. That's coming up next. I'm Mike Esposito.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
With you here until 8, until Cubs baseball on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
One of the reasons why I loved Patrick Mahomes coming out of college, humble brag, I had him at quarterback one, was because there was enough evidence of in-structure play to show that he can play quarterback in the league, because you can't just rely on all out-of-structure and flash. Mahomes is a pretty damn good in-structure quarterback as well, and there was enough evidence of him doing it in college that made me think this guy can be an NFL quarterback. And Williams dealt with similar issues that Mahomes dealt with. They didn't have the greatest team around them in college. I mean, Williams was getting pressure on three-man pass rushes.
That is the voice of our next guest, who will be joining us here on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Here on the Clock on 670 The Score, Mike Esposito in for Mark Rohde. We are pleased to bring in Ted Wynn from The Athletic. Ted, good evening. We appreciate your time today.
Hey, good evening. I was just listening to the ads before coming on, and there was like a nasal balloon ad. Now I'm kind of interested to look into that further.
We can help you. We can absolutely. Alex will hook you up after the segment here with that information. But we heard you from you coming in, and that's the comp I know that excites a lot of Bears fans, the Mahomes-Caleb Williams thing. But you did a breakdown recently on Caleb, and you know, everyone, I think, kind of a foregone conclusion right now that the Bears take him one. But you did a breakdown on Williams and his ability to play in structure, to play in the pocket. What did you find as you did that breakdown on Caleb?
Yeah, you know, I think the natural comp for Caleb is Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, I think when people make that comp, they're not saying that Caleb Williams is going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. They're just saying stylistically the players are similar in the way they win, some of the throws they can make off platform. And, you know, when I scouted Mahomes in college, I think, you know, most people were saying, like, you know, he's not going to make it because he's just playing way too much out of structure. There's, you know, he makes ill-advised throws. His footwork is off. This is not going to work in the league. But when I watched him carefully, there was just enough plays of him going through his progressions and making really good reads and things like that that made me encourage that, you know, he can develop this part of his game. And I think the same with Caleb Williams. I think most scouts in the league have taken this sort of philosophy towards quarterback scouting now. Everybody's looking at the traits, and then, you know, there is enough evidence of Caleb just going from his front side read to his backside read on full field reads. And when he wants to, he could play in structure. And when he does, you could see how efficient his feet are. You can see how efficient his mechanics are, being able to deliver the ball to his third, fourth read, for whatever it is. So I think that all that stuff is very encouraging. I think just part of why he pressed so much in college was he just felt like he had to try to win on every single play. And hopefully when he moves to the league, he doesn't have that situation. And you can see him being a little bit more patient.
Well, and Ted, the Bears brass and Ryan Poles, the general manager, have certainly done absolutely everything they can here in the offseason to kind of get Caleb, or get that offense around Caleb, situated. I mean, the Keenan Allen trade, I know lots of Bears fans are excited about that. They signed Gerald Everett. They've signed some offensive linemen. You already had DJ Moore. And there's talk, and I would love to know your thought, as the Bears have a very intriguing pick at 9th overall, because you figure there's going to be a run on the quarterbacks. You figure there's going to be a run on receivers. But what at 9? What is your top one or two scenarios as to what the Bears end up with at 9?
I think the Bears have done a really good job of rebuilding their offensive line. I know they had trouble staying healthy last year, but if those guys are healthy coming into the year, they should be a massively improved offensive line. And, you know, I think there's some thought that they might upgrade at left tackle, but I don't think, you know, you want to use number nine pick when you have a pretty good left tackle already, and you got great value drafting him late in the draft as well. I just think, you know, if you have a chance at Rome Odunze, if he's there at nine, you got to jump on him. I just think he's going to be a superstar receiver. You know, in any other draft, he'd be by far wide receiver one. But if he's there at nine, I'd be running to the podium.
So what makes him, and I mean, we don't have to go into full detail on all the other receivers, but Marvin Jr., clearly we've been talking about him for over a year, but it's just so strange to hear you talk about Odunze as such a, you know, high upside player. And, you know, objectively, I guess he's what, the third receiver in this draft? Would you characterize that as accurate?
I would put him number two. Neighbors would be my number three. And I know Neighbors gets Neighbors in some, according to reports, some scouts and teams have him number one over Marvin Harrison Jr., which is kind of crazy to me. But to me, I just like the skill set of guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. and Odunze a little bit more than I like Neighbors, who I think needs to really work on his route running and being physical. I think he has to work out of the slot, whereas I think Odunze could work outside and inside. He's just such a refined receiver as far as being able to set up players with his routes, his release package, and then just incredibly strong hands, making all those catches downfield. And you know, I'm not the first one to make this comp, but I really like the Devonte Adams comp for him. He's plenty athletic, but he's not like a burner. But he has enough speed to where he's going to challenge you, and he's going to make defensive backs run off, and which is giving him the back shoulder, and he has such strong hands to complete those back shoulder passes. So I just think he has such a complete package at such a young age. You just don't see that very often. I think wherever he's going to come in, he's going to come in and be able to produce right away.
Talking with Ted Wynn from The Athletic. He is their All-22 film analyst, staff writer. You can find him on Twitter at @FB_film analysis. And Ted, you mentioned the Bears left tackle, Braxton Jones, fifth round pick a few years back. He started since drafted. We hear often from Bears fans who are not necessarily sold on Braxton Jones. He's adequate. He's certainly done a decent job. Is he good enough for the long term? Do you see development out of him? Because, you know, his intangibles and certainly where the Bears got him in the draft, all that other stuff fits great. What is your take on Braxton?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I've watched him and studied him carefully, but in the games that I did see, I thought he was adequate. Obviously, there are some weaknesses with inconsistency, and he's not the most athletic. So I could see the temptation to upgrade at that spot. And if Odunze is gone, then I would consider maybe getting a left tackle that you think could be elite, and then really kind of solidifying that offensive line and having two bookend tackles for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, because that, you know, we were talking before the show about Darnell Wright and what a almost, I don't want to say boring, you know, because you drafted him in the first round, you expected him to be good. He is good, and he's done a great job, and oh, great, you know, but there's not a lot of drama, just a plug-and-play kind of guy. And I know at left tackle, as I said, we've talked a lot about Braxton Jones since he was drafted. So especially with a rookie quarterback, left tackle to me, as you mentioned, if the receivers are gone, there are either two or three tackles that you might consider that high, or is it a scenario, and what do you think of this, from nine is something where the Bears would, because they only have the four picks in the draft based on the trade activity, that they made me try to move back a few slots from nine?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I'm coming back to the Odunze thing again. If he is gone, which he might be gone, I think you could get a lot of value trading down and still be able to get a top-tier tackle, because this is a very tackle rich draft, and maybe you could go, you know, you could get another receiver that's going to be in that second tier later on. Again, this is a very wide receiver and tackle heavy draft, which is good for the Bears. Because I feel like not exactly needs, but two things that could really help their help the team. So getting a few more picks would help. And just another thought, with the Chiefs and how they build around Patrick Mahomes, who has a similar who Caleb has a similar skill set to. What they've gone to is they've really tried to put a lot of value on getting two bookend tackles for him, and then just letting whatever receiver they can, and just saying, your ability to scramble is going to get these guys open. We're just trying to get you two bookend tackles so that we could protect you. And maybe that's a thought that the Bears, come into with the draft and try to upgrade at left tackle.
Well, and I don't disagree with that assessment at all. And, we've seen to lean more on the Kansas City analogy. When it came to who do we pay, is Tyreek Hill a guy we're going to pay? Not that they're saying anything bad about Tyreek Hill, but they're going to allocate what resources they have to other positions because they feel they can plug in more receivers. You don't need a Tyreek Hill when you have Patrick Mahomes. He raises the level, I guess, of the other receivers on that team. And we've seen lots of receivers shuffled in and out of Kansas City. So offensive line, yeah, I mean, that to me is a very logical step, especially, Ted, as you mentioned, in a very tackle-heavy draft. You're never going to go wrong with good offensive line play, and we saw that with Darnell Wright last year. Switching gears to the quarterbacks, I mean, this to me is fascinating. Do you think we've gotten to the point where quarterbacks go 1 through 4, or do you see something shifting in that, or 4 in the top 5 maybe?
I think at this point, I would be more surprised if it wasn't quarterback at 1, 2, 3, 4, just because there's a need there with the top 3 teams. This is a very good quarterback class, and next year, supposedly, is not going to be a very strong quarterback class. So I think teams feel like if they need a quarterback, they better get one this year. And 1, 2, 3, you're going to have the Bears get a quarterback, Commanders going to get a quarterback, New England likely going to get a quarterback, and the Cardinals are likely going to trade out of that spot. And we know Minnesota got that extra first-round pick because they're going to try to aim to trade up. And I think they're going to – and they really need a quarterback as well. So, I think in all likelihood that's what's going to happen. I think Minnesota's going to trade up, and it's going to be 4 quarterbacks gone after the 4th pick.
I want to ask you about one of those guys, J.J. McCarthy, because local kid here in the Chicago area, played at Nazareth before ending up at Michigan and playing for Jim Harbaugh, and Harbaugh raves about him. I know I've been reading about him since he was like a freshman in high school. Clearly one of the best in the class, but I know the knock on him, if you want to call this as a knock, is that he wasn't really asked to do a ton at Michigan. What do you see when you watch film on J.J. McCarthy, and where do you see him getting drafted? By which team?
Yeah, I think when you watch J.J. McCarthy, he has all the traits you want in a quarterback, but unfortunately just didn't see the traits enough on film because, like you mentioned, he wasn't asked to do a lot, and Michigan had one of the best defenses in the country, had one of the best running games in the country. That formula won them a national championship. But to McCarthy's credit, he was very good on third down. He made plays when he needed to, when things broke down. He's athletic enough to get outside and make plays outside the pocket and scramble for yards. He's very accurate throwing to his first and second reads. So I think if you're a coach that believes in your play calling ability, which almost all of these offensive coordinators do, then you think like, I could get a guy like J.J. McCarthy and I could play through him and just make sure that he throws the ball where I want to, and he could do that very, very well. And if things break down, he's athletic enough to kind of go make a play, kind of like a Brock Purdy plus. I think that's the that's where the imagined ceiling for J.J. McCarthy is he can be like a Brock Purdy with a stronger arm and with a little bit more athleticism.
Is New England where you think he ends up? Or let me rephrase that. I'm assuming, as maybe you are, that Daniels is the second pick to Washington. Is that what you're estimating? And then where do you see the 3-4 going?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Daniels is the second pick, I would hop up, you know, I would run to the podium and draft Drake May, because to me, Drake May is very clearly the second best quarterback in this draft. But I kind of understand why the Commanders would go to Daniels, because he kind of fits what Kingsbury really wants to do really well. So, I would run to the podium if Drake May is there, and I think that's what's going to happen. To me, J.J. McCarthy is more of a late first-round type of guy, but for all the reasons we mentioned before, he's going to get pushed up into that top five because teams, he's going to be the last guy that really has a true first-round grade. So teams are going to be clamoring for him, and that's why he's going to go number four.
So two questions off of that. Number one, because we heard Williams-May all football season, right? So how does it, and I guess this is the fun, you know, people have with the draft, how is it between the end of the season when football is actually being played and now May is all of a sudden in a lot of cases, and I don't want to say a lot, in some cases, you know, he's number four on some people's list. And it was a clear 1-2 all the way through. That's my first, what is it? Because you seem to be very high on Drake May.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of expectation for Drake May coming into this last year because he played so well the year before. And if you look at the team around him, his offensive line was really bad. He didn't have a lot of good receivers, and his number one receiver didn't play until late in the year. And he was getting used to a new offense, trying to learn a new system. So there was a lot of inconsistencies on his film. So I think he didn't play as well as people thought he was going to play. And when you watch his film, there's some misses that people get really worried about. But I think all these issues that he has are very correctable. I think a lot of our footwork issues, there's some timing issues with his receivers. And I just don't see the issues that he has as like fatal flaws. I think they're very correctable, and all the other plus traits he has and that are so important, like creativity, you know, arm talent, all the things he has in spades. So I would take him number two, no question. So I just think it was just very high expectations coming into the season. I think there are people have different thresholds with, you know, missing easy layups and that sort of thing. But I think, you know, if you could correct those things, which I think it can get corrected, I just don't see it as much as the issue.
Last few minutes with Ted Wynn from The Athletic here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mike Esposito in for Mark Rohde on the clock today. Last quarterback question for you, Ted. I promise we talked earlier about Roma Dunze, and Michael Penix's name came up. Guy who's been in college for a lot of years, has put on, you know, quite a show, specifically last year for Washington, but, you know, quality quarterback, old quarterback, and also a quarterback with some injury concerns. What do you see from Penix, and where do you see him coming off the board in this draft?
I like Penix a lot. I think he's going to be a guy, and I have a second round grade on him, and I think he'll get end up getting pushed maybe late in the first round also, because again, people just are not very high on next year's quarterback class. And this is a quarterback draft with a very good second tier of quarterbacks. And I think Penix is probably the top quarterback in that second tier. When I watch him, I just love that. One of the best, my favorite traits looking for quarterbacks is a controlled aggressiveness. And I think he has that. Like, he's always looking for opportunities to throw downfield, but he's not just chucking it up down there. I think he has reasons for why he's throwing downfield, and he's always looking for that opportunity to throw intermediate to deep. And I love that. I you know, you don't want a quarterback to just automatically go to the check down over and over again. And Penix definitely doesn't do that. He also has a very low pressure to sack rate. So he gets rid of the ball. He avoids sacks, sometimes to his detriment. I just love the arm, love the aggression. I mean, he ran a 4.4 at his pro day, which was surprising, but he doesn't scramble. He barely ever tries to break outside the pocket and scramble. But maybe as he moved away from those years in Indiana where he suffered all those injuries, and maybe he gets a little bit more confident in his body and his health, and he starts to use that athleticism just a little bit more, which I think he needs to do when he gets into the league.
All right, Ted. Well, hey, we really appreciated the info and enjoyed our conversation. We'll be reading you on The Athletic. And, hey, we're less than 2 weeks away, finally, from the draft.
Yeah, we'll all finally get to rest in a few weeks. So,
That's
looking forward to it.
All right. Ted Wynn from The Athletic. Appreciate your time today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. That's Ted Wynn. You find him at FB as in football, at FB underscore film analysis on Twitter. He is the All-22 film analyst and staff writer at The Athletic. That was one of the things I wondered too, because, you know, as we living in Chicago with quarterback needs, it was Caleb Williams and Drake May. Caleb Williams and Drake May, those are the names we heard over and over again during last season. And then, yeah, you heard about Jaden Daniels. You know, we've known about J.J. McCarthy, local guy playing right up in Michigan there. Penix and Nix, and you had – it was a fun college football year last year at the quarterback position. But it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, because as we had talked about with Ted, after the Bears take Caleb number one, it's the Commanders, the Patriots, and then if they don't trade out of there, Arizona at four. So we will see – and the Chargers at five. So we will see. There's sure to be some trading. I've seen nothing in any of the mocks except Marvin Harrison Jr. going fourth to Arizona. But maybe they trade out of that if somebody wants up for a quarterback. Who knows? This is the fun of it. We shall see. As we continue on the clock, we'll get into what Dave Wannstedt, for one, thinks about that number 9 overall pick after the Bears end up with Caleb Williams first. What happens at 1-9? And then the Bears have two more picks, a third and a fourth. We will discuss when we return. It's Mike Esposito in for Mark Rohde today on the clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Bears draft talk with On the Clock featuring Mark Rohde right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And good evening, everybody. Mike Esposito in for Grody tonight. Grody unexpectedly off today. He will be back soon. And glad to be talking on the clock with you and NFL draft and the Chicago Bears. Two straight years of that first overall pick. Last year traded to Carolina. This year we'll see what they do with it. Of course, the expectation, Caleb Williams, in a mere 13 days, Thursday the 25th is day one of the draft, that Caleb will be a Chicago Bear. What then do the Bears do at 9? And then they'll only have two other draft selections. The picks are the first overall and the 9th overall. We know all about those. In the third round, it's 75 overall. And in the fourth round, 122. The other picks were all traded away in various deals, including the Keenan Allen trade that was just made here. So the Bears with only four picks in this draft, that is opposite what it has been. Poles has had a ton of picks over the last few years. So we'll see what he does with only four. And this from the text line, again, 312-644-6767, if you'd like to call or text us. But a 773 texter writes in, without a top five edge rusher in this draft, and Montez maybe gets hurt, don't the Bears possibly regress to their first half defense of last year, which, as we know, was not good? And is that not then risky when you have a rookie quarterback and you're trying to make the playoffs? I tend to agree with that. You look at the depth chart, you look at what the Bears have on defense, and you did sign DeMarcus Walker in free agency last year. So-so first year, in my opinion, for Walker. Sweat was obviously a home run midseason trade that Ryan Poles made. And then in the middle, your defensive tackles right now, you have Jervon Dexter and you have Andrew Billings. Zach Pickens is in there, but you've got to build depth in there. And if you draft a first round three technique or edge rusher, boy, does that defense look better, as to our texter's point. Well, that is exactly what our old pal and 670 The Score football man Dave Wannstedt thinks they should do.
You know, I'm always going to lean defense, because those pass rushers, we still need another pass rusher. We all agree on that. You know, I evaluate all those pass rushers. The best one, in my opinion, is Latu, the guy from UCLA. You know, but, you know, there's a lot of people, some people don't like him because of the injuries and the medical part.
I don't get that, though. Like, he
a lot of people love him. A lot of people love him. I think this kid will be the first defensive pass rusher off the board.
Now, that's Dave Wanstead with Parkins and Spiegel the other day. And the funny thing is, depending on what rating service you read, Latu from UCLA, the senior edge rusher, 6'5", 265, at the one I'm literally looking at right now on CBS, he is the third rated edge rusher. Now, Wani thinks he is the first edge rusher. This particular site that I'm on, though, as I mentioned, CBS Sports, has Jared Verse from Florida State and Dallas Turner from Alabama ahead of Latu. So the Bears will have, you figure, the Bears will have their pick of at least two of those guys that I just mentioned, right? You figure out of the wide receivers that whether it's Odunze or whether it's Malik Nabers, there is a chance that you're picking from the two of those. I don't think that's likely, but there is a chance of that. And then you have the tackles. You have Olu, you have Alt from Notre Dame. Those are the two big names that you see in the top 10 in a lot of the different mocks. You also have Fuaga from Oregon State. So the Bears are going to have all kinds of choices. And here's what I think, and this, again, my opinion, what Ryan Poles is going to do. Last year, Ryan Poles, Jalen Carter was sitting there at 9. Ryan Poles knew ahead of time, I'm not taking Jalen Carter, even though we need a 3 technique. I want Darnell Wright. And what did he do? He picked up an extra 4th-round pick, but trading back 1 pick with Philadelphia, took Darnell Wright, plugged him in at right tackle, and Darnell Wright had a very strong rookie season. I think Poles already has a strategy. It's not going to be swayed a ton by what happens ahead of him. He's built all of those scenarios. He knows who he wants. He's going to follow his board. I don't think there's going to be any last-minute trade options, whatever. If he has something in his head that he wants to do, let's say in his mind, you know, picks 10 through 25, you're getting the same quality of guy. And if you trade back from 9 and maybe pick up an extra pick somewhere else, that pick is just as good as the 9 pick. Maybe that is what he is already planning to do. Of course, he's not going to reveal his cards. To me, the great thing about this 9 pick is you're already hitting a home run when you take Caleb Williams, but then you're going to have another quick hit right back at the draft board to fill another huge need with, I mean, everyone we're talking about, a great college player that projects to be a potential Pro Bowler here at the NFL level. We are out of time here and on the clock. I want to thank you for listening. Thanks to Ted Wynn from The Athletic for joining us and breaking down a little film with us. Thanks to Alex Kuhn for producing the show. I will still be here for another hour. We're going to do some Cubs talk leading into Cubs and Mariners with Zach's pregame starting at 8 o'clock. Pat and Ron and Zach and Jordan Wicks pitching for the Cubs against the Mariners and Bryce Miller this evening. But thanks for listening to On the Clock. We'll continue next with some Chicago Cubs talk. And Craig Counsell was on the station mere hours ago. We'll break down some of his comments as we get ready for Cubs and Mariners. It's Mike Esposito in for Grody tonight here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Today on the clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Bears draft talk with On the Clock featuring Mark Grody right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And good evening, everybody. Mike Esposito in for Grody tonight. Grody unexpectedly off today. He will be back soon. And glad to be talking On the Clock with you and NFL Draft and the Chicago Bears. 2 straight years of that first overall pick. Last year traded to Carolina. This year, we'll see what they do with it. Of course, the expectation, Caleb Williams, in a mere 13 days, Thursday the 25th is day one of the draft, that Caleb will be a Chicago Bear. What then do the Bears do at 9? And then they'll only have 2 other draft selections. The picks are the first overall and the 9th overall. We know all about those. In the 3rd round, it's 75 overall. And in the 4th round, 122. The other picks were all traded away in various deals, including the Keenan Allen trade that was just made here. So the Bears with only 4 picks in this draft, that is opposite what it has been. Poles has had a ton of picks over the last few years. So we'll see what he does with only four. And this from the text line, again, 312-644-6767, if you'd like to call or text us. But a 773 texter writes in, without a top five edge rusher in this draft, and Montez maybe gets hurt, don't the Bears possibly regress to their first half defense of last year, which, as we know, was not good? And is that not then risky when you have a rookie quarterback and you're trying to make the playoffs? I tend to agree with that. You look at the depth chart, you look at what the Bears have on defense, and you did sign DeMarcus Walker in free agency last year. So first year, in my opinion, for Walker. Sweat was obviously a home run midseason trade that Ryan Poles made. And then in the middle, your defensive tackles right now, you have Jervon Dexter and you have Andrew Billings. Zach Pickens is in there, but you've got to build depth in there. And if you draft a first round three technique or edge rusher, boy, does that defense look better, as to our texter's point. Well, that is exactly what our old pal and 670 The Score football man Dave Wanstead thinks they should do.
You know, I'm always going to lean defense because those pass rushers, we still need another pass rusher. We all agree on that. You know, I evaluate all those pass rushers. The best one, in my opinion, is Latu, the guy from UCLA. You know, but, you know, there's a lot of people, some people don't like him because of the injuries and the medical part.
I don't get that, though.
A lot of people love him. A lot of people love him. I think this kid will be the first defensive pass rusher off the board.
Now, that's Dave Wanstead with Parkins and Spiegel the other day. And the funny thing is, depending on what rating service you read, Latu from UCLA, the senior edge rusher, 6'5", 265, at the one I'm literally looking at right now on CBS, he is the third rated edge rusher. Now, Wani thinks he is the first edge rusher. This particular site that I'm on, though, as I mentioned, CBS Sports, has Jared Verse from Florida State and Dallas Turner from Alabama ahead of Latu. So the Bears will have, you figure, the Bears will have their pick of at least two of those guys that I just mentioned, right? You figure out of the wide receivers that, whether it's Odunze or whether it's Malik Nabers, there is a chance that you're picking from the two of those. I don't think that's likely, but there is a chance of that. And then you have the tackles. You have Olu, you have Alt from Notre Dame. Those are the two big names that you see in the top 10 in a lot of the different mocks. You also have Fuaga from Oregon State. So the Bears are going to have all kinds of choices. And here's what I think, and this, again, my opinion, what Ryan Poles is going to do. Last year, Ryan Poles, Jalen Carter was sitting there at 9. Ryan Poles knew ahead of time, I'm not taking Jalen Carter, even though we need a 3 technique. I want Darnell Wright. And what did he do? He picked up an extra 4th-round pick, but trading back 1 pick with Philadelphia, took Darnell Wright, plugged him in at right tackle, and Darnell Wright had a very strong rookie season. I think Poles already has a strategy. It's not going to be swayed a ton by what happens ahead of him. He's built all of those scenarios. He knows who he wants. He's going to follow his board. I don't think there's going to be any last-minute trade options, whatever. If he has something in his head that he wants to do, let's say in his mind, you know, picks 10 through 25, you're getting the same quality of guy. And if you trade back from 9 and maybe pick up an extra pick somewhere else, that pick is just as good as the 9 pick. Maybe that is what he is already planning to do. Of course, he's not going to reveal his cards. To me, the great thing about this 9 pick is you're already hitting a home run when you take Caleb Williams, but then you're going to have another quick hit right back at the draft board to fill another huge need with, I mean, everyone we're talking about, a great college player that projects to be a potential Pro Bowler here at the NFL level. We are out of time here and on the clock. I want to thank you for listening. Thanks to Ted Wynn from The Athletic for joining us and breaking down a little film with us. Thanks to Alex Kuhn for producing the show. I will still be here for another hour. We're going to do some Cubs talk leading into Cubs and Mariners with Zach's pregame starting at 8 o'clock. Pat and Ron and Zach and Jordan Wicks pitching for the Cubs against the Mariners and Bryce Miller this evening. But thanks for listening to On the Clock. We'll continue next with some Chicago Cubs talk. And Craig Counsell was on the station mere hours ago. We'll break down some of his comments as we get ready for Cubs and Mariners. It's Mike Esposito in for Grody tonight here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.